This is the Afternoon Drive Podcast with Philip and Skip from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
.205 on your Afternoon Drive at News Talk 580 and 105.9 KMJ. Good afternoon. Welcome to hour one of the program. I'm Philip Teresi. That's Skip Echeverria. Your phone numbers are 490-5858. Toll free. You can join us at 800-776-5858. You'll find us all over social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook Live at Drive KMJ. Joshua Weekly stands by to screen your calls this afternoon. While I once again blindside Skip with the Daily Buzz question from KMJNow.com. After reading Dr. Fauci's emails, which were released following a fulfillment of the Freedom of Information Act request, should Dr. Fauci be fired? Let us know what you think at KMJNow.com. The Daily Buzz question is sponsored by the Boz Allergy, Asthma, and Sinus Centers. Skip, after reading Dr. Fauci's emails, do you believe that he should be terminated?
No. No. We have people active in Congress right now that are being investigated for peddling underage women. So, no, I did not think so. I think they're a Rorschach test. Is that the right word for it?
Rorschach.
Rorschach test. See, he knows the big words.
No, I've seen Watchmen a bunch of times.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm borrowing that from a writer from the BBC. So it's not even somebody who even cares because they're not on our side over here.
Yeah.
When you look at the emails, if you think Fauci was a flip-flopper who's a big old fat liar, then you're going to think Fauci was a flip-flopper who's a big old fat liar. And if you didn't like his sense of humor, you wouldn't like that either. If you're somebody who thinks Fauci belongs on a saint candle or immortalized, because those exist, by the way, immortalized as Brad Pitt on SNL, then you are fangirling out even more over Dr. Fauci and what he's written and following along with the science and also over his sense of humor. So you will see what you want to see in those emails.
I like that answer. I especially like the invocation of the emails as a kind of cultural Rorschach test.
Yes.
And I agree with that. I don't think that Anthony Fauci should be fired for his emails. I think that Anthony Fauci should be scrutinized very carefully for the lapse in judgment that was evidenced by his inability to articulate in a human way, in a kitchen table conversation way, the essential truth that all of the information that we were going to be working with was going to be evolving rapidly and coming fast and in high volume. And so advice and information was going to lag, and that what we think is the best possible idea based on the information at our disposal that we've been able to assimilate so far today may be one thing. By tomorrow, we may be saying, actually, you know, we're going to go in the other direction. Anthony Fauci should have had a capable PR person out in front of that microphone. Go out, give your doctor's explanation of what in the world's going on, and then have a person who speaks human come out, break it down to bullet points, and remind everybody, and there's a lot of information coming in constantly, so this is the best information we have today. I wouldn't make any long-term stock investments based on this. I wouldn't end your marriage based on this. I wouldn't sell your house and move to Nome based on this. And even then, I'm not sure he should be fired, but I think that he should be handled.
Well, one thing I do want to point to on the emails is that even though these are private emails, nowhere does Fauci make the claim that he was being muzzled by the president,
yeah,
which I think is important because there were arguments kind of going back and forth about whether or not Dr. Fauci was able to say what he felt he needed to say. So I think that that's an important point that, you know, the right can hold up as an argument of positivity for president number 45, and the left needs to recognize and not complain about, right? Like Fauci said, he wasn't muzzled, so you can't say that anymore. It came from the guy. If there's one thing that it made kind of, I guess, reiterated, is this is a man who's been working in a government position for decades. He knows that his emails can be requested and he would have to provide them. So I don't think you were going to find anything. Like he's too smart for that, right? Like I think that that's the difference maybe in the folks that have been in the system for a long time is you know your stuff can be requested and released. So I don't think you were going to find incriminating like, hey guys, keep this on the down low. This is what we think, but not really type stuff in the emails.
The Freedom of Information Act has, I think that it's bred a couple of different things like, oh, say for instance, Hillary's email server. That's one of those things that I think very much came out as a result of a person with lots of resources wanting to try and kind of sidestep Freedom of Information Act rules. 30,000 missing emails. Really? 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 You had a server in your bathroom. No backups. Okay. You're running a foundation worth how much? And your IT guy put it in the closet. Got it. I have a couple of friends who are in service to the government in various capacities. And one of my friends was kind of new to the scene about 3-4 years ago. Got a great job. Traveling back and forth, D.C., California, spending some time in the Pacific Northwest. And it was repeatedly, expressly requested that I not put anything that would be difficult to explain into an email. Because when I'm emailing my friends, I'll say crazy things sometimes just because I'm in a mood or on my second bourbon. So I started putting Timothy Leary quotes, but highlighting the text and turning the text color to white. So if this relatively insignificant person who nobody in a million years would ever file a FOIA request on ever ends up having their emails attached and they did not have the sense to have everything sent to them in plain text instead of HTML, somebody's going to wonder why in the world all of this correspondence keeps going back and referencing the electric Kool-Aid acid test.
Well, and then what they'll do is they'll put Philip Teresi into Google and be like, oh, that makes sense.
Oh, he's a professional jerk.
I think that it is an important thing to reiterate. You know, we hear these stories, people will be fire him, don't fire him, whatever. But to how does that apply in the here and now with us? It is really important to understand your company's policies on emails and access to you or evaluation of you in the online world.
Yeah.
And I don't think, looking at some company emails, that people really pay attention to that.
No. How long do you think it will be until there is a case made for a new prospective employer being allowed access to previous employers' email records of a new hire?
Oh, so like you would with like getting a referral or not a referral, but checking a reference?
So just for argument's sake, fast forward 5 years and you and I have split and I am now interviewing for a job with KISW Rock Radio Seattle. And I think they're Town Square. I know that they're not a Cumulus station. Okay. And so the parent company of KISW Rock Radio Seattle sends a request to our corporate office that says we would like to review any non-sensitive correspondence to evaluate this person as being appropriate for a mid-level management position. Right now, if you sent that request to Cumulus, the response would simply be, unless you have a subpoena, thank you for writing, have a nice day. There's going to come a point in time where somebody's going to go get that subpoena, or somebody's going to make a convincing argument for those emails to get handed over. Now, I'm not ashamed of anything in my emails here. I can sometimes be a little terse when I'm having a labor management grade disagreement with my superiors, though I don't think I'm ever disrespectful, but definitely sometimes the brevity has to creep in place of good
just
humor.
Just assertiveness.
I'm very lucky. They treat me way better than I deserve because I'm such a jerk sometimes. Unfortunately, that's reality, and it would definitely come through if you were a manager reading my emails. Even non-sensitive emails, there would be a point where you'd be like, oh, the first time somebody pushes on him about X, Y, and Z, he's going to be a nightmare for like 3 days. That could affect my ability to get a job. Every single hiring manager in the world would love to know about that before they make a commitment.
I think so. And I think it's about recognizing that workplace etiquette standards are changing. And there's a way to document it, because we're not having interactions around the coffee, around the water cooler anymore, or, you know, the coffee break. So it could be possible maybe for higher level jobs where you're doing background checks and stuff. I mean, I think just like entry level, it probably won't take place. But yeah, if you're, you know, if you're going to be hiring somebody that's pulling down a big salary, or somebody that's working in HR, or where it really makes sense that they need to know how to communicate via email, then that's going to be an important piece.
I think there's an argument to be made for any employee who is in possession of either proprietary knowledge or the handling of relationships with outside clients.
Yeah, that. Well, and so here's another piece of this. I know how much we love employment training. No one teaches this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like they don't teach this type of communication in schools. I don't know that they necessarily teach it in even college or whatnot. So at what point, if that's going to start to be the expectation, do you start to educate people on it? Otherwise, they're just going to be tripping over themselves when they blow it.
I think that there has to be a period of people tripping over themselves when they blow it, kind of like we had and are still to a certain extent having with social media, where you've got somebody who, you know, in their professional life, oh, I don't know. Let me pick on realtors for a minute. All you realtors that have sent me friend requests on Facebook and then picked fights with me about political stuff that you clearly only read the headlines before you formulated an opinion about. 10 years ago, a realtor going on Facebook or Twitter and saying something snotty to some other random person simply didn't matter. You probably weren't going to get to sell that person's house when the time came, but who cares? Today, if you were an agent for, I mean, name any real estate brand name, Century 21, London, Zuber, Exit, all, I mean, high end, low end, whatever. Keller Williams. If you go on social media and act like a kook, you're going to lose your job. If you act like a jerk, if you act like a bigot, you're going to lose your job. And there was a whole rash of those stories over the past few years. And people are eventually going to have to learn, when it comes to your professional emails, when it comes to any correspondence on the .myjob.com email addresses, you got to keep it short, sweet, to the point, and super professional.
And don't reply to all, and don't use all caps. That's just my personal request.
I'll take an all caps email once a day if we can just stop reply to all.
It's a new era in news talk, only on News Talk 580 1059 KMJ.
If you miss any part of the afternoon drive, you can get the podcast available at KMJNow.com. That's where you can also get podcasts from Broski and Musan, Ray Appleton, Mark Levin, and the weekend lineup. You'll find it all there. Also on the website, you will see a news article, an update from a meeting that happened today with Cal OSHA. As we've been talking about getting back to work, vaccinations rolling out, COVID and life back in the workplace, and whether or not masks are going to be a part of it. So, Philip, tell me, are we going to be wearing masks outside the studio?
Maybe.
I love the clarity.
Yeah, thanks, OSHA. This is helpful. So part of the problem here is that Cal OSHA is, there's a little bit of a reinvention, reinventing the wheel going on here. We've already got so many layers of bureaucracy and various experts chiming in on this that it really feels like it really feels to me like Cal OSHA just needs to put their stink on it to continue to assert that they too have some authority here. Which, by the way, ties delightfully into the ever-evolving conservative philosophy of there's no such thing as the lessening of government power, and there's no such thing as a branch of government that does not want to extend its power into everybody else's purview. I swear to God, the DMV would have an opinion about whether or not we should have masks on in the workplace at this point if they could just get their computers to work long enough to send a press release asserting they have a right to an opinion on the matter. What Cal OSHA is suggesting is that in a workplace where everybody's vaccinated, then we should be able to follow the CDC recommendations and stop wearing masks in the workplace. But if anybody's not vaccinated, the unvaccinated person needs to wear a mask, maybe, unless they're socially distanced or otherwise hygienically segregated effectively.
So how does this work out then if you have some folks that are making the statement, you know, that this not so new but now being reused statement of my body, my choice? Because there are people that have absolutely decided. I mean, it actually surprised me on some of the comments coming in yesterday, because we did that story about the conspiracy theorist preacher that was down in Florida who ended up, he's on a ventilator because of COVID. The argument being, if I'm okay with this, then I shouldn't have to wear a mask if everybody else is vaccinated around. Now, I think there's going to be a segment of the population that doesn't get vaccinated for very specific reasons and will still continue to follow mask. You probably won't even have to ask them twice, right? Like, they'll continue to do everything.
Yeah, lung transplant patients, yeah, generally speaking, going to be cautious with the new lungs.
But the folks that are like, nope, don't want to, don't have to, I mean, are they going to have to show a vaccination record that is missing a COVID vaccine? Like, how do you manage that as a workplace? Because Cal OSHA isn't telling us exactly.
Cal OSHA's solution seems to be everybody can just keep wearing masks until next year. And it's nonsense. It's nonsense. Look. This is going to sound like I have completely run out of empathy. And let me be clear that I have. I don't want to get another shot. I don't want to get vaccinated. I didn't want to wear a mask. I didn't want to slather myself in hand sanitizer. I didn't want to spend 2 weeks sheltering at home when there was nothing wrong with me. I don't like any of this. I have continued to abide the recommendations that have made sense to me to the extent that was necessary to get along in society, to protect myself and my family. The last of these was the decision to take the vaccine. Considering where I fell on the scale, I was far from the first by many millions of Pfizer vaccine recipients. And by many millions more, far from the last. I have been vaccinated. I am no longer at any measurable risk from the coronavirus. Even if I were exposed to somebody carrying a variant, the most likely consequence, besides the virus simply never taking hold, is that I would have a brief asymptomatic infection. If you've had a lung transplant, or you're suffering from hepatitis, or you've got some kind of issue that has rendered you immunocompromised that makes any of the available therapies two of which don't involve dead virus. They're mRNA therapies instead of vaccines the way Salk invented them. If none of those work for you and you need to wear a mask and you need to maintain your distance, tell me just enough to establish like, hey, I got a thing. I got to, you know, hang back. I don't need to know your medical history, not because I don't care about you, but because it's not my business. And I'll be cool. And we'll keep arm's distance and I'll make sure not to come and sneeze on you. If you just didn't get the vaccine because you don't want to, come to work. Don't wear a mask. It's going to be your problem, not mine.
Well, I think what we might see is, it's so strange because the same kind of personality traits that would go with, hey, if I got to wear it and this is the rules for right now, like whatever. I don't think that that's a bowing down to authority. It's just, this is where we're at. I think that folks might be less likely to be like, hey, by the way, why should we have to wear them for so-and-so? That said, if people don't want to get a vaccine and are absolutely adamant they're not going to, what I see happening in the future is you're going to sign your life away on a document that says if you get sick here, you can't sue us, or that you relinquish your rights to maybe that pay the sick time off, you know, whether that's, you know, anything that falls under FMLA or, you know, in some, don't be surprised. You might see them say like, hey, if you get it here at work, I don't know if you're insured, if we're going to step in and pay all the insurance stuff. See, I think you're going to get a waiver.
That's definitely going to get talked about, and I don't think that any of it is necessary. Let nature take its course. Let nature take its course, because the people who are going to suffer the consequences are going to be the people who either refused to take the vaccine, not because of medical necessity, but because of stubbornness, who lied about it. Or it's going to be people who couldn't take the vaccine and need to be taken care of. I have to be honest, I've never in my life wished to have any kind of weird, like, hygienic ailment. But the anti-vaxxers and their weird crap about these vaccines has made me wish desperately that I had dandruff, so that every time I got around an anti-vaxxer, I could just run my fingers through my hair and be like, I'm shedding on you.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
This is the Afternoon Drive Podcast with Philip and Skip from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
2:36 on the Afternoon Drive, and coming up a little bit later, the United States Supreme Court has restricted the scope of a computer fraud law. This is not a Section 230 thing. This is this is a terrifying abuse of access by a broke cop selling privileged information to somebody he thought was stalking a stripper. This is...
Oh, what I would have loved to have been in the room to listen to this one.
The reaction from the court... You guys have to stick around for this, because the reaction from the court and who fell on which side of this thing... Y'all are going to be surprised what the Supreme Court had to say about this behavior. But I wanted to get to this piece from Business Insider.
Well, real quick on the court thing, remind me, they've had a lot of unanimous decisions lately, which I read a very interesting article about. So we'll touch on that, because even the very united front is kind of making people scratch their heads and go, whoa, wait a second.
Sometimes you just get a silly season and they all go, no. But this from Business Insider. I'm not gonna get into the whole article, because most of the article is really focused on why it is that the Fed needs to chill out and not make any major changes to what they're doing. But there's just a little bit of a piece in here about the labor shortage and how much conversation have we heard? We've seen red states that have said, we're going to take the federal money that was there as a bonus to help people who were unemployed because of the pandemic, and we're going to reapply it as bonuses for people who get off of unemployment and go back to work. We've seen this arguing about, well, is the fact that unemployment is more profitable than going to a job proof that there's a problem with unemployment or evidence that people are not being paid enough? And then the question of, are people declining to return to low-paying, menial jobs because they're making too much money on unemployment? Or is there some other contributing factor? And that's the piece that I wanted to get into here. And it's really, it's a twofold thing, because there's been so much like hand-wringing over, do we need to end the unemployment benefits? Well, the unemployment benefits are going to come to an end naturally in September. That's when the federal government's current plan to continue the unemployment enhancement is going to conclude.
And some states have already decided to say thanks but no thanks to those additional federal benefits.
Correct. The other piece of this is schools. Go back to almost everywhere in the country will be back to full in-person instruction in the fall. How much did we hear over the course of this past school year, how much of a challenge it was, especially for single parents, but even for two-parent households with a lot of flexibility, to face the prospect of returning to a 9-to-5 job when your kids haven't gone back to school yet?
So we weren't in the situation where it was a one way or the other had to be. We had some flexibility in our household, even with 87 kids. And the decision was made to stay with a distance learning perspective for the kids and also a remote contract job for Mr. Skip rather than the 60, 70 hour a week obligation working in particularly the service industry, restaurants, right? And I think that there are a lot of families that are going, okay, when the kids go back, we can get to normal. We can be gone during the day. You know, this is one more summer. This is like we lost last summer. This summer, we can be with the kids. Maybe you don't go take the big vacation. Maybe you kind of pull back some of the expectations there. But to be able to spend time and like do things this summer, I think you're going to see people start to go back to some sense of normalcy when school starts back up. And then there's also just, I don't think you're going to see so many people working in the service industry. They're going to find something else to do. Things went online. People got different educations. They looked at their bills and decided what they could and could not do. I think we're going to see the shrinking of that service industry permanently.
I suspect that there will be some contracting of the service industry, because I do think that there are people who went and boned up and got other skills. I agree with you there. There's also an entire generation of young people coming up who are going to be ready to go into entry-level jobs because they're fresh out of high school and they want to make a couple of bucks, and City College might be free, but food still isn't. But there's been so much like angst and panic about this. And it's interesting to hear the different sides and the different straw man arguments that have evolved out of this. Because what have you got? You've got one side accusing the other of effectively having devolved into a generation of welfare queens, and their opposite number screaming and bellyaching that everybody who has a McDonald's franchise is cracking a whip and demanding that their employees get back to the fields. I think that the reality is we didn't get here overnight. The problem was not created instantly, although sometimes, man, it felt like it. The solution to this is to simply allow, as kids go back to school, those federal unemployment benefits to expire. And to be very, very, very clear, that that's what's happening. And I think that it actually benefits more than just the person who currently is at home trying to get their kid across the finish line for this academic year. I think that it also benefits all of those landlords, all of those people who might not have received a rent check if not for those unemployment benefits. Because if you start cutting that off, those rent moratoriums, although hotly debated and currently being litigated, those eviction moratoriums are still in place. If I have a choice between taking unemployment, getting my kid through school, and starting to look for work as we get into the month of August, or going into panic mode and hiring a lawyer because I'm not sure what my status is, I want the low-stress route, and my rent's going to get paid while I'm on the low-stress route. I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's fair. I am saying that the money is going to flow to where it needs to flow to continue to stabilize the market. The thing to do now is to make sure that everybody knows these benefits go away in September.
Right. Well, and we have a big employment kind of numbers coming out tomorrow. But my understanding from what I've been seeing early on is that we are at a rate that is on par with about March 2020. So we're getting back to some sort of stability or pre-pandemic numbers. There's always going to be a certain level of unemployment.
Yeah.
But depending on where you're looking and where you're watching, it makes it sound like every other person is walking around getting unemployment benefits, when in reality, some of the numbers I've seen nationally before the pandemic, 2019, it was sitting at about 4%. We're at about 6% now.
2% is a big deal.
It is a big deal. But coming back after the pandemic, I mean, it's also not near double digits. So while I do believe people are going to get back to work, I mean, people want to have that opportunity too. There are plenty of people, though, that have to be strategic about it. I know you and I talked about whether or not we thought California was going to pull the plug on the extra benefits. It's June already, July, August.
Yeah. I think that the smartest thing to do, if you want to stimulate the economy, if you want to encourage employees and employers to start sounding each other out sooner rather than later, start an ad campaign right now that says, we've all been through a really tough time, and we're really glad that so many people have been able to help each other out. The extra money goes away in September. It's time to start boning. It's time to start cleaning up that resume and maybe get a haircut.
Yeah, James is checking in. He's a hiring manager, so he has some interesting insight. He thinks it's a perfect storm. One, unemployment benefits do incentivize some to not seek work right now. Two, entry-level jobs aren't necessarily paying enough in some spots to motivate people to get a job and not be on unemployment. But three, and this is the big one, everyone is hiring right now. So candidates can literally pick and choose the best job for them instead of having to just take what work is available. And I think that that's a big piece, because maybe before you had somebody who didn't have any work experience or very little, and you're like, hey, you should be happy I'm offering you this job. And they're like, I got four other offers on the table.
Well, the other piece of it is you spend an awful lot of time telling people like grocery store workers and delivery drivers they were essential. Now you're going to tell me that essential is only worth minimum wage? Come on. I got four other offers in my bag.
Yeah, that's an interesting piece of it as well, in terms of it was, you know, oh, you just bag groceries and flip burgers. That used to be an insult. And then we venerated people, rightfully so, for some of those jobs. And now they're like, hey, wait a second. You told me I'm worth something, so pay me.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, the advice from Business Insider, both in relation to the Fed and a prospective rate hike and in relation to this panic over the employment situation, is just chill. It's going to unknot itself well before Christmas.
You really get free meals working at this McDonald's?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. How much would you weigh if you ate a Big Mac, a fries, and a Coke?
I think you'd just stop eating it. I know people that did that with ice cream places.
Maybe. Maybe. Or you just, you turn it a Jabba the Hutt. Like eventually you're stuck working drive through forever because there isn't any place else that's physically safe for you restaurant.
There's healthy options.
Look up the calories on the McDonald's chicken salad. Oh my God, it's worse than the Big Mac.
They gave up making salads.
Going to McDonald's for a salad, like going to a hooker for a hug.
So, it's not often I get to say I told you so, but Philip, I told you so that the sweet deal on the awesome restaurant Kebab City was going to sell out immediately. So if you missed out on that, just stay tuned because we'll have more offers coming for you. But that's one of the many reasons you should check out KMJNow.com. We've got news, traffic, weather, and opportunities to enjoy great food for basically half price. So we've been talking a lot about encouraging ways that companies and states are trying to increase hesitant folks to go out and get vaccinated. We actually have a story coming up about Anheuser-Busch on the way.
Mm-hmm.
But we shared with you a couple of weeks ago that Ohio was going to offer a drawing, if you will, a lottery for folks to get vaccinated. If you got vaccinated, you were entered to win. If you were a minor, you were entered to win free tuition to the public university systems there, and there are more winners.
Full boat scholarship to University of Ohio.
Right. Plus your room and board, I think it was, and books. So we heard the first Vax-a-Million winner last announcement in Ohio was on her way to go buy a used car when they called her.
Yeah.
She was a young woman in her 20s. Well, they have announced another pair of winners.
The picture of the guy who won the $1 million is, I think, my new favorite. I just want a boatload of money picture. Jonathan Carlisle from Toledo, the second winner of the $1 million prize, decked out in his Amazon delivery driver uniform and a beard that only myself, Rob Weeks, and Jason Field understand is emblematic of simply having given up.
I just love him, though. Like, I saw his face, and I'm like, you look like you've been working hard. You probably have man musk, but like, I just want to hug you, and you're vaccinated, so it's fine. He looks so happy.
That's a been going through it beard and a smile on the face of a man who has realized, oh my God, I'm not going to be trapped in this hell of schlepping around other people's junk forever.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
And the winner of the full boat scholarship to the University of Ohio, Zoe Vincent, Mayfield Village is where she's from. Lovely young woman. I'm going to guess she's a senior in high school.
Yes.
And because she does not look like a child. If you told me she was a college kid already, I'd believe you.
Right. And apparently she said that she was not ready when Governor DeWine called her father to say she won. Quote, I really was just like surprised because what happened was Governor DeWine called my dad. He just kept saying his name a couple times. And I said, why would he be calling you? Because I had no idea what it was about. She's a med tech student at Mayfield High School, and she plans to study pre-med and become a pediatrician.
There's the next buzz question. If you win the California, what are we calling our
vaccine lottery? I think it's Vax-a-Million, too. I think they just borrowed everything from Ohio.
If you win the California Vax-a-Million sweepstakes, if it is your name that is drawn out of the pot of what I think is now like 25 million eligible participants, can you be nice to Gavin Newsom long enough to get the check?
Yep. I'll say thank you twice.
I might even be nice for that much money.